Wondering if you should stay in Illinois or move out of state? Get your copy of Scott Tucker's book, Escape Illinois, Should I Stay or Should I Go? Get your complimentary copy at retirementdakota.com.
Investment advisory services are made available through AE Wealth Management, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
So right now, Mayor Emanuel is announcing this big development, right? I was talking to Bill and Wendy about it a little bit.
Yeah, I guess it's going on right now. They're standing in the rain down there on that South Loop site. Announcing that this 62 acres that has sat empty seemingly forever is going to become a cool new neighborhood.
And it's like Clark and Roosevelt, southwest of Clark and Roosevelt, yeah. We're talking, right?
When you stand on that bridge, if you were at that Target on Roosevelt Road, cross the street, look south from the bridge, it's a big, 62 acres is a big piece of land. But when you're in this big built-up urban area, and you look at that piece of open space, except for all the weeds and old rail lines, you would think you were looking at a major park. That's how big it is.
It's described to me, or I saw it described as essentially wilderness now.
Yeah. Yeah,
that just sounds so weird to say that there's wilderness at Clark and Roosevelt.
Exactly. So you're looking out over this thing. You know, Steve, I'm a kayaker, and you can paddle from Chinatown north to downtown. And as you pass all that, I mean, it's not like, you're out. It's really not like you're out in the wilderness. There's a lot of concrete. But it's a big piece of open space. It's a long stretch of the South Branch of the Chicago River that has been standing open. It's, in case people aren't aware, it's on the east side of the river. And it's kind of hard to believe. I think I said to you off the air, 20 years from now, 30, whenever that's all settled, people will look around and say, really, this hasn't been a neighborhood for a century? It'll be a great place to live. There's another parcel just north of that also becoming developed as residential. And, I think people are going to think, of course we live here. We should have lived here in the, 1870s.
Yeah, it's nice to see that the affluence continues to move a little bit south.
A little south,
in
yeah,
the area.
Right. Yeah, that will help.
So this is a done deal. I mean, they know who's going to develop it. Everything. This is.
Yeah, it's been announced. So that's been the
problem.
They're
not going to dig a hole, right, and just leave
the
hole
there.
Right.
No, we've already done that over here to the east.
Kind of was.
There's a developer related, which has done quite a bit related Midwest, and in fact is the developer that has the old Spire hole. And they're pretty busy in a lot of ways. But yes, it does appear that this will roll forward.
And they're going to call it Rodkinville, or
yes, that's and
very
just
nice.
The piece north of that is Bertrand Land. So we finally both get our names on the map.
Very good. Well, none of that is going to happen. So tell me though, I mentioned affluence moving south.
Yeah.
You wrote an amazing story, I think, in Crage today. You can read it at ChicagoBusiness.com about more children in Chicago growing up in little affluence bubbles than is typical around the United States.
Right. Yeah, there's a sociologist from the University of Southern California. It happens that she's a Chicago native, I discovered when doing the story. But she looked at what she calls income segregation in 100 major U.S. cities. And Chicago is more income segregated. In terms of families with kids, Chicago is more income segregated than 70 out of 100 major U.S. cities.
Okay, so let's tell me what that means. That means that kids live with other rich kids?
Rich kids live with other rich kids, and poor kids live with other poor kids. And what's interesting about this is she also looked at income segregation among households without kids. And while households with kids are becoming more segregated in Chicago, households without are becoming far less.
Ooh.
The idea being, I don't have to look at schools, so I can just go for the neighborhood I think is a great place to live and not even notice the quality of the schools.
And so the segregation comes because parents are taking their kids
and congregating around those best
around
school
the
district.
Nice schools. Right.
Yeah, I've got the money to pay the entry fee, which not literally, there's no entry fee.
No, they got rid of that.
Yeah, exactly. But I've got the money. I can afford to get into those neighborhoods that have the new Triers and the Hinsdale Centrals. So I buy a house there, and everybody like me who can afford to buys a house there. Those schools, the two I named, New Trier and Hinsdale Central, though, we think of them as places where affluent kids go, they used to appeal to, they used to serve a much broader spectrum of the economic life of the city, and it gets narrower and narrower because everybody who can afford a house, essentially you sort of bid up the price of going to those
schools. A great
districts.
School. I mean, that's what I did. We left the city to go to Deerfield because of their school system.
And now nobody else can afford to move to Deerfield because of you.
Honestly, if you know what, we moved in at the right time because I don't know if I could live there now.
Yeah, you're a great example. I mean, that's the example, right? I mean, Deerfield High School, the Deerfield schools, used to serve a much broader spectrum than they do now. Nobody's saying it's wrong for parents to buy near the best schools. It's almost obvious that parents would and should buy near the best schools. And what she's saying is just what that means is all those resources get concentrated. Middle class and lower middle class people may be crowded out of the Deerfields, the Lyons Townships, the Hinsdale Centrals.
And that brings us to Springfield because that's what they key. It goes all the way back to Don Clark Netsch running for governor against Jim Edgar.
Right.
25 years ago.
Saying let's make our school funding a statewide thing rather than funding schools locally.
Right.
Yeah, that would make an enormous difference.
It's up again this spring in the legislature. They're talking about it. They always do talk about it. But, you know, we rely on property taxes, and so the rich get the great schools and the poor don't.
And the poor don't, yeah. And one of the things several people talked about when I was writing this story is her data is for the region, not only for the suburbs and not only for the city. But we are seeing that happen in the city, of course. You know, we see people move to the Nettlehorsts and the Blaines and that sort of thing. And then we see schools in the poorer parts of the city shut down.
Right.
Because those people have the people who lived in those neighborhoods have left. There's not as much population base to serve those South Side schools. They get shut down. The people who are still on the South Side don't have the school, the population to improve a school that you might have at a Nettlehorse or a Blaine or...
Check it out. You can read the story at ChicagoBusiness.com. Dennis Rodkin from Cranes. Thanks for coming in, Dennis.
Thanks, Steve.
I appreciate it. You're listening to the Week Plus Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. Steve Bertrand in on this Thursday afternoon, and Bill Geiger is in the studio as well. Bill, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Good afternoon, sir.
Just looking at Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is down 33 points so far today, so not so bad. But you were telling me about this new study from the McKinsey Global Institute that maybe our long run is over or we're not supposed to expect as much in the future?
Well, not as much in terms of the stock market. The overall returns are expected to be lower over the next 20 years than the last 20 years.
So we're on a great run, right, for the last 30 years. Things have been pretty good in general.
There was a except for those two big holes, right?
Okay, except for the holes. But overall, you know, but they're not expecting that like to match the 30-year run over the next 20 years.
No, what's happened is expectations are down in terms of stock market returns. But we're also expecting an exceptional amount of volatility. The ups and downs are going to be bigger and harder and, at least on the downside, not as much fun.
All right, so here it is. The McKinsey forecast says stocks will generate an annualized real return of 6.5% over the next 20 years as opposed to 7.9% over the last 30 years.
Yeah, this is why if you're 5 to 10 years away from retirement, you're going to need income in retirement, and you really should start transitioning a portion of your portfolio 5 to 10 years out, because if you've got a lot of income coming in, think about this, Steve. If you've got more income coming in each month than what you spent.
That's the goal, isn't it?
Yeah. Do you care that much about volatility in the stock market? You can ride it out. But the key is to have income, because if you don't, every time you're pulling out of a stock portfolio to support yourself in retirement, you're spending principal.
Okay, but let's look at that number, 7.9% over the last 30, 6.5% over the next 20. I mean, obviously, it's a projection. That's only 1.4%. Does that add up and make a significant difference?
Well, you can twist numbers any way you want. Let me give you another number. From January 1st of 2000 until now, the S&P has averaged 1.9%. That's a whole lot different than McKinsey's talking about.
That's lower than 7.9, Bill.
It's just a tad, right?
Yeah.
But that's the type of environment we live right now. And you cannot look at long-term returns when you're thinking about planning for retirement. Because averages, my favorite economist joke, and we don't have a lot of them, is the economist who drowned in a river with an average depth of 3 feet.
Right.
Average depth of 3 feet. He was standing in a hole.
Right.
The averages didn't help him. And the averages don't help you either if you're standing in a hole just before retirement. That's why you need to get a handle on risk. That's why you really need to start shifting part of your portfolio to create income that you're going to need.
What is a mean reversion?
Mean reversion means everything kind of gets back to the average.
Okay.
And if you've had some really high years, you can probably have some really low years coming up.
But that's the sort of thing that you can't really, that's nice long term, but when it comes to retirement time, you can't really look at it.
It makes nice coffee table conversation. You know, but in real life, in terms of real life individuals preparing for their own retirement, it kind of sort of doesn't mean anything.
Okay, so let's say we're 10 years out from retirement.
Right.
We got a large stock portfolio.
Right.
What do you suggest we do?
Well, the very first thing is get a handle on your risk, because we're not in a real fun time right now.
When it comes to risk, you're saying the risk of where we're invested or the risk of where we live?
The risk of our situation. The risk of your portfolio.
Okay.
The risk of your portfolio. But the second thing is, you know, during pre-retirement, people think about asset size. My portfolio is a million. My portfolio is a million and a half, like this. And they don't really focus on the really key thing in retirement until they retire. And that's income. When the paychecks stop, it's like 25 years of unemployment.
Uh-huh.
There's no more paychecks. And you need to start planning early on, 5 to 10 years out, for how am I going to shift my portfolio to create the income that I'm going to need for retirement. Steve, I know you're going to talk about this in just a moment. Retirement income planning is so, so, so important. We're going to do something special for the listeners today. For the next 5 callers who call in, they meet the criteria you're going to talk about, I'm going to sit down with them personally and help them put together a retirement income plan.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Bill. Good to see you. And we'll see you again soon, I think. Thank you very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's a Thursday afternoon, bright and sunny downtown. Kimberly K. Rea. Is in the studio. I almost did it, Kimberly.
That's all right. That's okay.
It was the crack about the sunshine, I think. So Big Shot Marketing, you are the CEO, the founder, the dreamer behind Big Shot Marketing. And a couple of weeks ago, you know, we used to have Scott Kleinberg on the show from the Tribune, and he moved on to New York City. So I kind of put out the call. I said, I need someone who can talk about social media. And boom, you were on top of that.
I was right on top of it.
Tell me about Big Shot Media, Big Shot Marketing.
Big Shot Marketing has been in business for 17 years, now you know my age, and we specialize
in... Okay, so you're 18. We'll get over that. Yeah.
Right on. So we specialize in online digital marketing. About 90% of my business is not only setting up, but managing client social media marketing.
So, we talk a lot about that, and social media has become one of those sort of omnipresent terms that no one really can break down and understand. Let's say I run a restaurant, okay? You come in and you tell me, or I come to you and I say, I need a social media presence or to market it on social media. What do I do?
So that's a great question, because some of my job is actually being like a doctor. So I sit down with a client like yourself and I'd say, what else are you doing? So social media to me, like you mentioned, is one aspect of the overall marketing process. So finding out what the client is doing online with their website content, social media, email marketing, physically inside of the restaurant. With social media, as we set up for a particular business, we take a look at the brand of the business. Things I know about 2-year-olds recognize 200 brand logos. So I need to be crystal clear with my branding on all my social platforms. So we start there, then we start to write the content. They say that out of 100%, 60% of you being found online today is social media marketing. It used to be your website. Well, today only 40% of you being found in an organic search on Google.
Right.
Is social media marketing.
Okay, so let's do that again. So I walk in, a customer walks into the restaurant. 10 customers walk into the restaurant.
Correct.
6 of them will have come across me by social media. Only 4 will have gone to my website.
Correct.
And
it really all comes down to, as you mentioned, social media is kind of this gray area. It comes down to content. When I sit with my clients, I say, I need to find out the keywords that you want to be found on when somebody searches you. And once we have that bucket of keywords, then I'm able to say, let's take a look at the website. Does it have the right keyword content on the site for you to be found?
Right.
Are we using those social media
to be found in a search?
In a search.
Right.
And then we do the same thing for social media. I've got to make sure that as I'm putting out content, branded, video, graphics, that the key words that they told me in that very beginning, I want to be found on these words, Kimberly. I want to be found on Italian restaurant, displays, fast casual. Those words I actually have to use. So as big as social media looks, or as tough as social media can look from the 13,000 feet down look, it really comes down to words.
Okay, so if I'm in Displains and I want an Italian restaurant, I'm going to go to Google. I'm going to type in Displains Italian restaurant.
Correct.
I get that. That takes me to the website. It's not the same route via social media. Do you have to happen upon it? Or
well,
how
that's a great question, because if you are good at social media and things I know like Google Plus is the number one social platform for us to focus on, because 96% of consumers start their search on Google. Your Google Plus update on your social post to Google Plus may pop up before your website today.
All right, you have to talk more slowly for me and explain to me what you mean by that.
So we know.
I didn't mean really talk more slowly, but yeah, no, explain that with the Google Plus. I'm not sure I follow that.
I get extremely excited about
this. I really
this.
Didn't even mean that.
So we have these social platforms. You know Facebook, you know LinkedIn, you know Twitter. Well, Google has a social platform. It's called Google Plus.
Okay.
We know in social media marketing that we have to update all of these platforms, including Google Plus, with whatever update we're going to put out for the restaurant today. Google, 96% of consumers start their search on, favors their own platform.
I see. Okay.
So if I'm going to use those right keywords about Displains Italian food and use your graphic, when you do an organic search on Google looking for that restaurant in Displains, potentially my Google Plus post that I did could trump your website coming up.
I see. Okay.
That's how powerful Google is.
Are you a big Twitter? Well, if you had to choose between Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, what do you think is the, if someone's going to focus on one of them, which would it be?
That's a great question, and the answer is it depends on your business.
Okay.
Your restaurant that we've now opened in Displains.
LinkedIn doesn't help.
Not necessarily. I would focus. It's not that I wouldn't be on it. I would focus. I'd get laser focused on Facebook for you, Instagram for you, video for you, your YouTube presence. So depending on the business that I sit with, we try to get laser targeted to where their audience is hanging out.
Right. So, you know, I have this business show, and I like Twitter. I tend to use Twitter. I've set up my Twitter feed so that it posts on Facebook, which is, look at you, give me a look. That's the wrong thing to do,
it's
isn't it?
It's the wrong thing to do. You know why?
It's so lazy, and but it works
I know,
well.
I know, but I'm not lazy, and this is what I think. I think Facebook is a backyard barbecue. There's babies and kitties and meatloaf posts. Twitter is real-time news and promotion.
Right.
You're limited by characters, and you need to be using your hashtags. So I would not, two different cultures, post the same thing to both.
What I was going to say was I like Twitter. I get my information from Twitter, but I found that the people who respond to what I post are not on Twitter. They're more likely to be on Facebook.
Right.
Right? So I'm a little out of balance with the way I use social media.
I was watching you.
You were watching me? Yeah, How did I do?
One eye.
Yeah?
You do a great job on Twitter, but I also understand that. Where your audience is at, which really just answers the question that you asked me, where should you be?
Kimberly K. Rea is here, the proprietor of Big Shot Marketing. Were you judging my social media use?
Well, I have to stalk you.
Okay, give me a little analysis, doctor. You said you'd be like a doctor. What did I do right and what did I do wrong?
I like the way that you're posting. You're concise, you're short. You know, hashtags are really king for me. Finding out what's trending and jumping on that. In your position, you know, making sure every day I wake up and I check out what's trending, what words can I jump on to have me be more visible on Twitter is kind of what.
I think you have to convince me about hashtags because here's how I use a hashtag.
Okay.
As a person doing the news, if there's something big going on in the world, let's say Trump Ryan today in the meeting, I might search Trump Ryan or look at a hashtag in that way. But if I'm doing something, I guess I just don't ever search via hashtag.
Okay.
Right? And so if I don't do it, it's hard for me to imagine a lot of people do. Clearly, I'm wrong.
Well, not necessarily. Now, I'm using hashtags in a way that you do as well. If I have, we have 50 clients. We have 50 different social media platforms that we need to be on for them. I'm also searching hashtags the same way you are.
Right.
And trying to be top of mind if I can recycle those for a client. Or let the client know, hey, did you know today for your restaurant in Displains, Happy Spaghetti is trending. We want to be on it that way.
Okay, and so you would hashtag Happy Spaghetti.
Exactly.
But
a hashtag.
Right. Let's make it up. Everything's a hashtag anymore. But so for me to find your restaurant via that hashtag, I would have to go to Happy Spaghetti.
Right on.
Which isn't very likely.
Exactly. So that's why I say I use it depending on the client and depending on what we're trying to accomplish from everything that we do on social media. It's just not a tweet. It's just not a post. There's a plan. And with that plan and all of these platforms, there's analytics. So I'm able to, one, put a plan in place for them and not just put out these silly hashtags. Sometimes we see them on Facebook, which, you know, shouldn't be there in the first place. But
yeah, you just scolded me there in a very nice way. I picked up on that, Kimberly. Yeah, you did. Kimberly K. Rea, the proprietor behind Big Shot Marketing. It was nice to talk to you. I'm so glad you jumped on my tweet and came in to say hello today.
I appreciate the opportunity.
You bet. You're listening to The Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thanks, so. Steve Bertrand here. Orton, what's the traffic look like? Can you give us a traffic report? He's left me too. It's amazing. Elise Glink, you're not going to go, are you?
No, I'm here forever.
Well, I'm only here for about 10 more minutes, so
all
we'll
right,
have
then.
To work that out with Bill and Wendy. Elise Glink is here. She talks about marketing, usually on Thursdays. And so to me, the big story this week is, and I still don't think I have a full grasp of this, is the new beer, America. Is it
right.
America or American? It's America.
I think it's America, but it's really interesting. If you look at all of the memes that everybody's put out on the internet, it could be America. That's one that I've seen.
So it's Budweiser. Hot. Budweiser saying they're going to be known as America through the election.
Yeah, through the election. E pluribus unum.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway, I got to say, this is just, I know that this had been kind of forecasted, but now that it's actually here, Donald Trump, my favorite political marketer, jumped in and said it's all because of him.
Oh, he did? Well, why wouldn't he?
Why wouldn't he?
Right.
He said it's because he's making America great again, that Budweiser got the idea to make Budweiser great again. I don't know what that means.
I actually saw a reference to that in the media, and they weren't quoting him. But they did sort of give him a little cred for it.
Yeah.
Budweiser saying?
Our brethren are getting a little lazy, is what I'm thinking. But anyway, what is Budweiser saying? They are just reaping the good and the bad. This is like a Q rating. So when you're in the media, you get a Q rating, which is basically how much people love you or hate you. And either extreme is good, right?
Just to get a number.
Yeah, because you want a number. You want to resonate. And so people are like, oh, what's your Q number? Negative 300. Fine. So the Budweiser thing, all I'm seeing are, you know, nothing positive, all really negative. But I think Budweiser is going to be selling a lot of cases because they know they've said it's 6 months only. And then after the election, they're going back to what they were before.
So people said that, wow, and a brand would never do this, give up their name for a period of time. But it seems to me that their brand is their can in many ways, right? It's still going to, the design of the can is so definitive that you're not going to accidentally not pick up a Budweiser, pick up something else.
Right. And there's some negative connotations to Budweiser as well, right? I mean, there are people who call it things that we can't say on air, actually, so I won't. But, you know, it's been around a long time. This is a very well-established brand. It comes out of Milwaukee. It was part of this original thinking of, you know, when I think of the Cubs, I think of Bud. You know, there's this connection with sports in Chicago and the Midwest and all the rest. When you look at what they've done to the can, it's very clever from a marketing perspective. They took the script of Budweiser, and that's what they did the script of America in. So if you looked at it quickly, And to your point, the can is exactly the same design. It's just this name and then the subtitle. You might actually just think you're buying a can of Bud.
Right. And so they get the pub out of it without losing the traditional buyer or have the accidental purchase
or
something
else. And you might actually gain. So what they're trying to do, obviously, is game the system, right? They want people to think of this can as being something unique and special and collected.
Do people collect beer cans anymore? Do you remember the beer can collections?
I have a beer can. This is my day of true stories on WGN. I have a beer can from the sequicentennial of Naperville, so the 150th year, I think, of Naperville, which was like 35 years ago. And my dad at the time, who's been gone a long time, my dad was the city attorney for Naperville, and they did a huge celebration, and I still have that beer can sitting in my kitchen.
You mean they had a special beer can made up for the sequicentennial?
They did, sequicentennial. They did.
Sequicentennial.
Yeah, it's a really long name.
What was the brand?
That I don't know. Isn't that funny? I just remember, it's probably Budweiser. I mean, America, but I don't know what it
is. Well, and so will Budweiser sell more beer because of this? I'm saying on 4th of July they will. I think there's going to be a lot of, you know, mom saying, oh, honey, look, I got the America beer for the 4th of July.
I absolutely think that they will. And this is one of those interesting years. Now, what's sort of funny to me is that they kept saying, well, they think they'll sell more beer because of the Olympics. The Olympics, I don't know, that's Brazil, and there's such a negative connotation with the Olympics right now. I mean, they just had the premier of Brazil is under indictment now.
She's suspended.
Suspended.
Only suspended. They voted that today.
Okay,
I get that, but I'm one of those guys who brought that up because it's the whole patriotism and all of that. We'll be watching together, America. No?
Yeah, they're a sponsor of the Olympics, right. So they want to have some connotation.
You're having none of it. I can see it. I can read it.
I don't know. I think it's a very clever thing. I think they will sell more beer.
Okay, so that's an established brand that is making an alteration in order to be relevant during the fall.
Right, and they're not doing the mistake that...
Well, who am I describing?
I don't know. So we were talking just before we went on air today about how Mr. Trump has shifted again with the wins. This guy is the best marketer in the world.
Well, is that true? I mean, is it true that he's a good marketer? Because to me, if he shifts with the wins, he's not putting out a consistent message ever.
Is that still
good marketing?
Well, but what is he marketing? My thinking is that, and I thought this from the beginning, is that Donald Trump was really doing this to boost his speech fee. And, you know, Trump water sales, Trump steak sales,
right.
I don't know, Trump whatever he has his name on sales, condos, co-ops. And I think that when all is said and done, Trump brand will be even bigger than it was before. So by that...
Yeah, but you don't still think he's doing it for the Trump brand.
No, I think now the ego has taken over and he's really running and to win the presidency, which is sort of the ultimate Trump, right?
Okay, so for 30 seconds, though, if you do shift and he is seen as needing to shift to the middle
to the right.
A little bit, okay. So, but if he's continually shifting from a marketing standpoint, that's not a good marketing strategy, is it?
I wouldn't recommend it for any brand that is going forward and wants to really cement who they are in the public's image. But I think Donald Trump is just an absolute brilliant guy at figuring out what it's going to take to get your vote. And that's what he's going to say that day.
Yep. See you in November, Lee Sklink.
With the wins.
Yeah, you're listening to The Business Lunch on 720 WGN.